Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
This episode is sponsored by Unidos US. Unidos US is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that serves as the nation's largest Hispanic civil rights and advocacy organization. Since 1968, Unidos US has challenged the social, economic, and political barriers that affect Latinos through its unique combination of expert research, advocacy, programs, and an affiliate network of more than 300 community-based organizations across the United States and Puerto Rico. Unidos US's Home Ownership Means Equity initiative has set a transformative goal to advance the economic prosperity of the Latino community by investing in solutions to help 4 million Latino families become homeowners by 2030. Unidos US and its Home initiative is moving Latino homeownership forward through policy and advocacy, community investments, as well as research and data, and is already halfway toward the goal. To learn more, visit unidosus.org/homeownership.
Welcome, everybody. Bill Hitchcock here with the Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. So excited. We've got, it's kind of one of those things, long-time listener, first-time caller, but it's a second-time caller. We've got a great guest on today. We've got some great content for you. And happy to be doing this with my kind of partner in crime here, my co-host, Mr. Juan Giraldo, one of our top mortgage bankers here in the company. Juan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Hi, everyone. Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you both, Bill and Juan, for inviting me back. I'm excited to talk with you guys today.
Laura, we're so excited to have you back. And I know that you have worn a lot of different hats out here in our industry. And currently, correct me if I'm wrong, but Unidos being your home now, Unidos US, and your title there, Senior Vice President of Economic Initiatives. Okay.
Got it.
Great. And I guess that the title's even longer. So it's, I think when you look at that, you're very, really focused on kind of the, civil rights advocacy, everything that's out there for the Latino community. But for new listeners to the program and maybe people that haven't seen you on some of the other segments you've done with us, can you tell us a little bit about kind of Unidos and the work that you do?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And thanks again for having me on. Unidos US is the country's largest Hispanic civil rights and advocacy organization. We've been around since 1968, and the work we do is really focused around what I call closing the opportunity gaps. And it's really with kind of the end goal of, increasing, opportunities and prosperity, nationwide, in the United States. And we're a multi-sector organization. And so we look at those opportunity gaps across areas like education and health and housing. Housing has been a big part of our portfolio, pretty much since we were established. But I would say in the last maybe 25 years or so, we've really focused on homeownership. So within the kind of the housing sector, homeownership has been a really big priority area. And I actually started my career at Unidos US. I won't say exactly precisely how many years ago, but it was a very long time ago. And I came back to the organization several years ago to launch the work that I do now, which is leading the Home Ownership Means Equity Initiative, or HOME Initiative. And we launched this initiative with the goal of helping to create 4 million new Latino homeowners this decade. And, to achieve that, we're looking at a few areas. One is around access to credit. A second is housing supply, especially for the more affordable, starter homes. And the third area is the preservation of homeownership. And the way we do our work toward those goals, we're advocates. We do policy and advocacy. We sponsor research. We invest in local innovations happening, in communities through community-based organizations. And communications. So that's overview of, you know, what we're doing, you know, in the housing space.
And Lauren, if I'm not mistaken, you set up that goal to be between 2020 and 2030. We're almost there, right? I mean, we're almost. Yes. And have you seen any progress in policy, obviously, in this decade? Do you think we, because, you know, the reason I ask this is because we keep getting news, right, regarding, hey, for example, we got some news today that unfortunately people from Venezuela with TPS, who started the process in 2023, apparently they're no longer going to be renewed until, you know, it expires pretty much in November in the next couple of months. Some people who have it until 2026, they're fine. Mm-hmm. How have you seen any progress besides these things that are happening?
Yeah, you know, so we do have this goal and it's through the decade. And, you know, I don't know about you all, but I do feel like, you know, recent years, it's been just kind of going from one extreme to another.
Yeah,
and when you ask about progress, I feel like it's kind of a tale of two cities. So I'll start kind of a little macro and share that, you know, we've been really looking closely at what's happened so far this decade, because we're about, you know, the midway point to our goal, as you noted. And, you know, we've organized kind of our thinking around kind of the eras of what we've gone through so far. When you think about the start of the decade, you know, that was, you know, the COVID era. And, you know, a couple of really big macro trends that happened at that time. One is we saw that the work from home trends really shifted migration patterns in this country and people's ability to move to different parts of the country. A second big thing, of course, that happened was, you know, interest rates went to just historic lows. And so those two factors, I think, together really drove big gains in homeownership, including within the Latino community. And so thanks in large part to what was happening at the start of the decade, you know, we saw really big growth that now we're looking at numbers, you know, really through like the end of 2023, and we're actually ahead of schedule for where we should be toward our goal of 4 million. Of course, then right after the COVID era, we hit what, you know, we kind of labeled the inflation era, which saw, you know, a big turnaround in terms of interest rates, just significantly started, you know, rising from those historic lows. Affordability really became a really big issue. And then just the overall cost of living made it challenging for a lot of families to enter homeownership. So that really kind of slowed down the progress that we saw at the start of the decade. And then to your point, where we are today, you know, in 2025, kind of in the middle of this decade, I think the story is still being written. That I think when I look around, I think of this as the uncertainty era. And so, you know, all the questions around monetary policy and interest rates and aren't we in a recession? One factor, you know, the tariffs and the impacts that has on the cost to build and just the cost of living in general, potentially. And then to your point, you know, immigration policy changes and what that's happening, the effect that's having in local communities as well as nationally. And I think about, especially for the housing sector, there's two sides of that. You know, one is we know that nationwide, about 30% of our construction workforce are immigrants. It's much higher than that in many parts of the country, like in the Southwest and Sunbelt for sure.
But you say 30%?
30%, yeah. And then the other side of that is just the forecast for demand, because we know that just demographically, we don't have the same birth rate we've had historically. And so the growth in our population driven by immigration has also fueled not just the construction side of housing, but the demand side. And so you think about what is that going to impact in terms of future home buyers and the ability if we're going to be doing really big constraints on the immigration side. So there's a lot of impact there. And that's why I kind of, it's still the story's to be written still. We're writing it as we speak.
Well, you know, it's and I'm glad Juan touched on that first, because, you know, Laura, when you set a goal, you're not playing around. You set a pretty huge goal.
Yeah.
You know, 4 million, you know, is a big number. And then when you talk about the different aspects to get to that, right, the number is big itself. And what a great goal to put out there. But, you know, there's all of the layers that you need to get there. It is around credit. It is around access. It's around awareness. It's all the things. So from a Unidos US standpoint, how do you all balance all of the needs to get to that goal? I know that, it's why we have, people, such as yourself in your role, but how are you all balancing that on a daily basis of kind of like, hey, what are you working on? What are you working on? And how are we pulling it all together?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a very big and ambitious goal. I think the numbers to date, though, show that it is attainable if we have the right kind of macro conditions to support it. And to your point, it's never just one thing, right? It's not like we can say, oh, we fix this over here, or if like interest rates get below 6%, then all our problems are solved. Like there's always different elements to it. And that's how we've organized our work around those three goals that I mentioned around, access to credit, the housing supply, and the preservation. And so, right now we focus our work around, policy and community-based work in those spaces, because it kind of gives us a little bit of direction. And so from, the housing supply side, I believe right now that's one of our biggest barriers to increasing homeownership, to closing the homeownership gap, especially the supply of housing on the more affordable side. Right. And so we're doing a lot of, working with partners in states and localities around doing like local zoning reforms and land use reforms, at the federal level, looking at some, legislation that's been introduced to, help increase, create incentives to building more homes. And then of course there's a lot of leverage you can also pull on the demand on the consumer side. Because at the end of the day, you need a balance of both. Like, it's not just about building more houses. It's also about creating, making sure that our mortgage finance, system is modernized and also kind of meets the needs of consumers today.
Yeah, I do feel like there's a lot of power in data and numbers. And the reason I say that is because I'm hopeful. I read this data recently that from a local nonprofit organization here in Charlotte that says that the average American family is having 1.2 kids per household, and Latinos are having 3 to 4 per household. That says a lot. And the reason I say this is because we are only growing more and more. So all these numbers are going to eventually shift for the better. Talking about that and talking about the future, Laura, looking ahead, what gives you the most hope about the future of Latino homeownership in the U.S.?
Yeah, there's several things that give me hope. I think, one, to your point, I mean, demographics are our tailwind right now. There's no denying in terms of, to your point, that the Latino population is growing. We're forming households at faster rates than other groups. We are a younger population overall. So we're kind of representing a larger share of that, those people, folks in their prime home buying years. Mm-hmm. We tend to have larger families also. And so just demographically, assuming that all kind of the other conditions are going well economically, those are really big tailwinds. And then the other is that, we continue, we do a lot of polling of Latino voters and Latino consumers, and consistently, attaining home ownership is such a big and important goal for a lot of families. And I just see time and again that, Hispanic families will kind of do what it takes to, whether it's, something, on one end, addressing any gaps in credit history, for example, getting that extra gig job to be able to save for the down payment, or even, moving to a more affordable part of, their state or even to other part of the country. I mean, that housing affordability and entertaining homeownership is so important, and families will do what it takes. So all those things collectively, give me hope. And of course, I'll also just kind of add that in this environment right now, I'm very heartened to see that increasingly housing is a priority kind of more from the policy front. And I'm seeing a lot of signs of bipartisan agreement on that, which there are not a lot of things out there in the country that there's bipartisan agreement. So I'm glad that housing is, one of those rare examples.
That's true.
Right, right. Yeah. And Laura, and some of the things that you touched on, I think a big part is getting that, recognition and awareness from the at the corporate level as well. And I know for Atlantic Bay, that's been a really big priority for us, is to be engaged more in the Latino community, build up, you know, build trust, build relationships, be in the, I think we talked about this last year. It's like, I think you likened it to, you just can't show up for, you know, holiday dinner. You know, you've got to be there when there's, you know, yard work and leaf raking day and everything else, and really be, you know, be part of the community versus just showing up here and there. And one of our big initiatives was our Tu Hogar, Tu Futura initiative. And, you know, Juan really helping to lead, you know, lead his team and lead our group around that. How do you see that building? And Juan, I actually want you to touch on that as well, as how you're seeing that build. But, you know, Laura, how are you seeing that, I guess, corporately and from lenders and also, I guess, on the real estate side, that we need to have more of those conversations, kind of build up that trust, so that I guess together we're kind of moving, you know, we're moving towards that same goal.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think trust continues to be, you know, a big, you know, I was going to say barrier, but actually I see it as an opportunity. And really what it boils down to, I think, is being authentic. And, you know, to your point, building example of kind of, you know, not just showing up, you know, kind of that, you know, for the special occasion or whatnot. But I think, you know, there are a few things that, you know, it seems some of it's kind of obvious, but, you know, I'll just to kind of state, and I think it's really important that, you know, that your team, you know, represents and is representative of the community that they're serving. And so that they're, you know, of and from that community, and just understand, you know, culturally any special, you know, dynamics that, you know, so people don't have to explain themselves. So they don't feel they have to enter this office and kind of code switch. They can be themselves. They can share their family situation honestly, and it'll be understood. You know, I think even something with like speaking Spanish, I mean, increasingly, you know, the Latino population is, a larger number of Latinos are born in the U.S. now compared to historically. And so a lot of Latinos are native English speakers. But, you know, I'll give an example just of myself. While, you know, in some ways, I actually am more comfortable speaking in English than I am in Spanish. When I hear someone speaking Spanish, or I know they can, or even some Spanglish, like I feel seen. And I feel understood. And so even if it's, I don't need the process for me to be in Spanish, just knowing that that effort is there and that representation is there, it makes, you know, me more comfortable. And so I think, you know, just, you know, being there in the community, and I think, you know, there's something too about kind of those shared values around like family. And so thinking about like, what community events do you support? You know, which, you know, even like through social media, like which channels are, you know, you're kind of advertising through, and so that you're going to where people are, especially like in their own time and with their families. And, you know, the research that I see is that the Hispanic consumer is very loyal. And so if they have a good experience, like not only will they come back, but chances are they're gonna, you know, tell all their friends and family about the good experience, and that trust, and kind of having that trusted advisor, that's a really big influence. So if someone's kind of looking into the process, they're going to ask their friends or family, you know, what did you use? Did you like them? Would you go back to them again? And so it really can pay dividends.
I always say that Latinos, we're not in the habit of shopping around. The reason I say that is because once you close a deal or help somebody achieve the dream of homeownership, they stick with you through a refinance, and then it's a family member and their cousin and their people they work with. They take your word for it. That's a referral. They don't go online and search a bunch of lenders and see who gives me the better rate. And that's one of the things that I'm so proud about our community, is the loyalty that we have between us. Touching bases on that, Bill, you know, the initiative of Tu Hogar, Tu Futuro, which I'm so proud of that name, because
you say it so much better.
Well, you said it great. Just don't beat yourself out, Bill. So Tu Hogar, Tu Futuro, Laura, was an initiative within our company to have a piece of home here Now we have added about 5 new Latino loan officers in the past 18 months, and it ranges from people from Venezuela, Colombia, Central America, and it's not just to rent a bunch of Latino LOs. It's a place where we have resources for them, but also Atlantic Bay, like Bill said, it's committed to serve that demographic. We're the largest, and I don't know what, I always have a problem saying this, but I know we are the, I think for the 6-5 years in a row, we're the minority with the most purchase powers in the country, regardless of policy, regardless of everything that is happening. Latinos continue to buy homes at a faster rate than any other minority or demographic. So Tu Hogar Tu Futuro was created for that, for ILOs to feel like they're home and they have enough resources to go serve our communities. And what we have done in the last 18, 19 months has been nothing but exciting. And Bill is a testament to that as well. So he's been a big part of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's in, you know, Laura, it is a lot of ties in the work that you all do. So when we met with you and you kind of introduced us to Unidos US and other groups like, you know, NAREP and other organizations around the country, you know, a lot of that is fact finding and understanding the things that, like that you said, of how do these initiatives work? How have they worked before? How do we make this really, again, not really even an initiative, just a part of our culture and our company? And I feel like that's where, you know, we've got it too, and where we're growing on it. But, you know, when you look at what Juan was touching on about the rate of home ownership, how do you see that playing out? Because there's so many factors when you look at the increasing rate of home ownership. And then, like you said, about family, you know, family population growth, but then also the average age. I think through some of the data, and the data that you put out is fantastic. I think some of the data was showing that the first time kind of home buyer age was lower in the Latino community than it was in, you know, versus, you know, as far as majority population. Is that correct? And how's that kind of shaping out when you look at, again, your kind of 4 million, you know, homeowner goal?
Yeah. So it is, I first maybe wanted just to kind of add a comment about the program you were talking about a minute ago, the tool that,
Tu Futuro.
Tu Futuro. I just wanted to kind of note that I really like the example you described, because I think I think back in the old days when people thought about serving the Hispanic segment, it was sort of like this little side program kind of over here, you know, yeah, kind of off to the side. And maybe it was pretty simple, like just translating some documents and you were check the box done. Yeah. But I think to your credit, like really integrating this program as part of just kind of the culture and the broader business strategy it's part of that, what we talked about earlier about that authenticity and just making it part of who you are. So I just wanted to first kind of commend you on that. But yeah, so you're correct that, you know, we talked a little bit about demographics earlier about the Latino population just in general being younger. And you're certainly seeing that in the home ownership numbers. And we've seen the trend that, you know, in recent years, the median age of a first-time home buyer has gone older, just generally speaking. If you start dividing it up by race and ethnicity, that trend still holds true. But for Latinos, just in part because our population is so much younger, you see that median age of a first-time Hispanic home buyer is much lower than a first-time, you know, white home buyer, for example. And so I think that has a lot of implications around, you know, who's out there, you know, like who's sort of ready to buy or who's out there kind of making those efforts. So, I mean, one, you have to think about on the need side, you know, I mean, income, savings. If you're younger, you might be early in your career. You may not have as much savings. I think for the Hispanic population in particular, because historically we've had a lower home ownership rate, you know, you don't see that same generational wealth. So oftentimes, you know, Hispanic homebuyers are not going to have that down payment assistance from, like, you know, the bank of mom and dad, for example. And so those are certainly, you know, some challenges. But, you know, but on the other side, I think, you know, with that younger demographic, you know, there's a lot of opportunity around thinking about how to use technology, especially around products where there's an openness around looking at different types of income sources. I mean, more and more people, you know, might have their main job and a side hustle or two, whether it's an Etsy store or doing some kind of other gig economy work. And so being able to understand and kind of see people where they are and how people live their economic lives today, which I think is very different than how our parents and grandparents did. So just kind of having that openness, I think, is really important when you think about just that demographic shift and how people are living their economic lives today.
When you look at kind of the lay of the land as well, when you mentioned a number of times, and I feel like almost every segment that we've had here on Lending Forward this year, we keep talking about the A word, right? Not Atlantic Bay, but affordability. And it seems like it's, you know, that's the word that's out there that is on the top of everybody's minds. But it still seems like one of the hardest challenges, because the what describes and defines affordability is different to everybody.
Yeah.
And if we know that, you know, cost of construction is going up, cost of labor is going up, all the costs keep going up. Has the bar for affordability moved? And do people need to shift with that as far as their mindset of, I thought that I wanted to, you know, affordability was me buying my starter home, but is affordability now, if I want to own something, it really is me buying a condo or a townhome or, you know, multiple families going, you know, we're seeing that happen, you know, more and more as well. So what are your thoughts there?
Yes, I agree. Exactly, 100%. I think, you know, when you think about, because you're right, I kind of chuckled when you said that, you know, the A word, I knew exactly what you were going to say with affordability, because it is, there's so many, if you can unpack it in so many different ways. And certainly there's, you know, the just home prices. And then you think about, you know, the lack of sort of that smaller starter house, the cost of construction, whether it's on the material side or even appliances or labor. And then added to that, you know, a lot of markets, the cost of insurance. There's so many different elements that go into that. And I do think that from the home buyer perspective, when they're thinking about what does affordability mean for me, like assuming their family's like, I really want to become a homeowner, I think there needs to be a little bit of a refresh there too about, you know, defining that dream of home ownership. And I do see signs of that changing. And so thinking about everything from, you know, a willingness to maybe move a little bit further out to a new area, which I think we saw that was certainly proven during kind of that COVID era, the families were willing to do that. I think to your point, thinking about different types of houses. So whether it's a townhome or a condo, you know, your first house doesn't have to be your starter home. I think I'll just admit that I think as like a lot of my fellow housing industry folks, I'm a little bit of an HGTV addict. And so for a lot of people, they have that dream of that single family detached house with the white picket fence. And it's great to have that dream. But it doesn't mean that that's necessarily has to be your first house. But then also I've seen a lot of, you know, interesting trends around people going in together to buy a house with family members, and not necessarily even just like, you know, multi-generational, like, you know, parents and then the grandparents, but even like siblings or cousins. And some communities, you know, looking at things like, you know, shared equity is another pathway that, again, maybe it's not for everyone. Maybe it's not the best solution in every market, but in some places that's really affordable, being able to get your foot in the door. Because if you look at the housing market today, I believe that the sector that's really, or the segment that's really impacted is that first-time buyer. Like if you're already a homeowner and you've had a little bit of that benefit of that equity, like I'm not saying it's easy out there, but you're in a stronger footing. But if you're starting from like zero, it's really hard to get your foot in the door. So if we can think about different ways to get people's foot in the door through like a condo, through a shared equity, through maybe buying with a family member, I think there's a lot more willingness for that, but there's still some consumer education that I think that needs to happen around kind of like that. Your first house doesn't have to be your forever home.
Not. Just to piggyback on that, Laura, one of the things that we're seeing a lot on the lending side is that more and more people now on the Latino community are either using more than one co-signer. We see now we see applications with 2 to 3 people on the applications. It's mom and dad and kids or some family members, and also a lot of people are moving to the outskirts of the city, to rural areas, because it's more affordable, homes are cheaper. Some people in the Latino community were big on land. We all want to buy a house with 3 acres or 5 acres of land. So people are moving out. And just to ask you my one more question, what do you think policy wise, what policy shift will have the biggest impact on expanding the Latino home ownership right now? What do you think that will be?
Not that we were going to put you on the spot.
No. Well, I'm just going to start by saying, I think this came up earlier, it's never just one thing. And so I think if I had a couple of, categories, the first is, just back on the housing supply. I think we do need to build more houses, and especially at that sort of smaller, more affordable price range. I've seen a lot of really great kind of trends and pro-housing legislation at the state and local level, across the country. So I see a good trend there. There's, legislation that's been introduced in Congress at the federal level that would provide tax incentives for building or rehabbing more housing stock. All of that, I think, yes, we need that. On the more mortgage side, I think we just need to be continually looking around, modernizing our mortgage finance system. And, right now the Federal Housing Finance Agency, as you guys know, has been super active this year. Director Pulte has been, looking at lots of ways of reforming the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so I'm optimistic with what's going to happen on the credit score side. We've already seen a lot of really great evidence around positive rent reporting. And I hope that continues to be something that there's built more awareness. And that's something that, more consumers and renters are able to take advantage of, to be able to get credit for the rent that they're paying, on time over, months and years. I see some good kind of work happening in that space that I hope will continue. Although kind of the one thing I'm really keeping an eye on right now, besides, of course, what, the Federal Reserve does with interest rates, is also looking what's happening with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. As you guys, I'm sure, know, there's a lot of conversations in D.C. around, releasing them from conservatorship, privatizing them, maybe doing an IPO. And as you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are foundational to our housing finance system. And so, I'm all for kind of always enhancing and making things better. I'd want to just be cautious that we don't break the things that are working. And so I hope that, our policymakers are watching closely to make sure that we're protecting the 30-year, fixed rate mortgage, that we're continuing to provide, liquidity and stability in our housing finance system, and that there's broad access so that families out there who are want to become homeowners and are putting in the work to make sure that they're credit worthy, that they're able to access it.
Yes, I can always leave it to Juan to ask the easy questions, right? Well, I mean, that was we touched on a lot. I can't believe how quick time goes. I'm just like, I just looked at the clock. I'm like, wow, that went fast.
Yes, this is always fun.
I know, we didn't even get to probably like half of the stuff that we wanted to cover. So we're going to have you back. Or actually, we'll probably get you on one of our segments that we really do about an hour, and we can really invite all the community to come out and kind of join in on that. But it wouldn't be an episode of Lending Forward, Laura, if I didn't ask you, how do you want to lend it forward for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so, I think about lending it forward, by being an advocate, and I've shared with you all before. My own family's, story of home ownership and how impactful that was, and thinking about, me and my brothers and that decision my parents made to become homeowners just really expanded the opportunities that we had, compared to my parents and certainly compared to my grandparents. And, the work that I do, I have, 20 plus year career in this space. And most of that was with a housing, federal regulator and with a large bank lender. And I made the choice to come to the nonprofit side because I wanted to be an advocate for homeownership and really make sure that other families have the same opportunity for the benefits that that homeownership provides around stability and wealth building. So, you know, I think of myself as doing that every day and nulling it forward because I recognize what an impact it had on me and my family.
Well, that's awesome. And, I can tell that you love what you do and you have a passion for what you do. I always enjoy having you come on because anything that, you know, Juan and I are always doing our planning and strategy meetings and things like that, and we may see a challenge, and then you have to be probably one of the most optimistic people that I've ever been around. You're awesome. You're on, right? You come on and you're like, okay, you're right. Things are moving in the right direction. So
yeah.
It's always a blast to have you on. So definitely we'll have to have you on again. Thank you so much for being here. Juan, thanks again for celebrating with me. Appreciate all the work that you're doing out there in the community as well and helping everybody grow. But this is a great way to start the day hanging out with you too. So appreciate you both.
Laura, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me back and excited for ongoing conversations. Thank you for the work you guys do too.
Well, thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Catch us every other Thursday with a brand new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.